So once again, welcome everyone for the 2014 Johns Hopkins University Workshop. I would not talk for long because I have another 10 minutes to tell you all about the logistics and about the organization. But at the beginning, I would like to welcome the rector of Charles University, Professor Tomáš Zima.
Summer school and meeting in Prague. We are very honored that there's a summer school at the first time is outside from the Johns Hopkins University, and it's for us it's a very prestige meeting and school to join the colleagues, junior and senior faculty staff to discuss the problem with the computer speeches and this area. I would like to thank the colleagues and friends from the Johns Hopkins University to coming there and prepare the meetings. The colleagues from our Faculty of Mathematics and Physics and School of Computer Sciences participated in past times as a team members or team leaders on the meeting and schools in the Johns Hopkins University, and I believe that the inspiring period in US will be moved to Prague to this historical buildings and historical city, that you will spend a nice and fruitful time in Prague. I wish good luck and success to your symposium. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opening. And now I would like to ask Professor Jan Kratochvíl, the Dean of the Faculty, who himself is actually from this building as a former member of our staff at the Computer Science. So please.
Thank you, and current member as well. Good morning, everybody. It's really a pleasure to welcome you in this, what we like to say, one of the most beautiful computer science buildings in the world. By what we mean, one of the most historical one. The building itself was founded in the late 17th century by the Jesuit order, not as a monastery, but as a seminary where new adepts were taught and prepared for going abroad and spread not only religion, but knowledge and love of knowledge. So it's very appropriate that the building, after being or belonging to the national courts and being a national bank, is back to the hands of the university and serves the original purpose of education again. Talking about history, I would like to say that I was always very happy that mathematics and physics were apolitical sciences, and that's also one of the reasons why it's mathematics and physics, and especially mathematics, survived the times of communism in the scientific strengths as they did. But it's always good to look back and remember and learn from the mistakes and sins of the politicians of the past. And the team of Jan Hajič brought to Charles University so far the access point to the repository of the rememberings of the Holocaust, what we call the Malak Center in Czech. And we believe that soon it will not only hold the access point, but the complete mirror, the first mirror outside the United States. And I'm very happy that the computational linguistics brought to the Faculty of Mathematics and Physics this, I would say, historical or more broad view of the sciences. Anyway, I would like to welcome everybody here again and wish you a wonderful week in Prague.
So thank you for this introduction. And now I would like to ask Sanjeev Kudampur to tell us something about the history of the workshop itself.
Okay, so good morning and welcome everyone. Thanks to the rector and the dean for welcoming us to Prague. This is indeed a beautiful building and a beautiful city. And I have been coming here every year for the last 10 years, but every time I sort of feel like this is new and exciting and something that I miss, and I tell myself I'll come here more often. I'll come here as a tourist rather than just to visit and work. But of course, every time it's again work, but that's all right because I still enjoy the visit. Let me start by telling you a little bit about the history of the workshops, mainly because I want to motivate all the workshop participants. I want to show you guys that you're basically following in a very illustrious and long tradition. It's both to put a little bit of pressure on you to do good things, but also to sort of tell you that this is a great institution and we've had a lot of success with it, mainly because of contributions of everybody who's here in the workshop. So this is really a talk prepared by me and my co-conspirator, Jack Godfrey. Jack is also a professor at Johns Hopkins, and we together organized this workshop. So how it all began is that in the 50s and 60s, the Institute for Defense Analyses in Princeton had a very successful series of summer camps. They were called SCAMPS, and they actually stand for something like Summer Conference in Applied Mathematical Problems. And these were good mathematicians, and they basically brought together academics from all over the US, maybe 10, 15 professors, 10, 15 PhD students, and they worked on hard cryptologic and communication security problems, and they made tremendous breakthroughs. A lot of it is classified, so we don't get to hear much about it, but it was such a big success that other people at the Institute for Defense Analyses decided that we should also do this for speech recognition and problems associated with speech. And Arthur House and Tom Crystal are two people that come to mind, also Jordan Cohen, who will be here later in this week. And so they started this, and that was the genesis of the first couple of workshops, which were held at Rutgers. And Professor Hermansky, who's sitting back here, was at the 93-94 workshops, so maybe when he stands up, he can tell you how that went. I was still a young graduate student. I knew nothing about speech at the time. And then in 94, the Center for Language and Speech Processing was established at Johns Hopkins, which is just about 150 miles down the road from Rutgers, much closer to the Defense Department's home base. And so the Hopkins workshop started because the Defense Department said it's better to have this right here close to where our people can go. And that was the first JHU summer workshop as we know it. Of course, Jelinek being Jelinek put his stamp on it and organized it in a way that was quite different from the Rutgers workshops. And that's the tradition we've been continuing. And just on a technical note, for those of you who want to get a sense of how 95 was, these were the days in which even on English speech recognition, the error rates were 55%, meaning the recognizer got more words wrong than right. And Spanish was considered multilingual. If you could do English and Spanish, you were doing multilingual speech recognition. And Spanish error rates were more like 80%, which means one out of five words were right. I think if you say the in Spanish, it might be one out of 10 words anyway. So I think you're to get one other word right. So anyway, that was the time. And I was actually there because I was a graduate student at the time. And this was my first JHU summer workshop. And what was it like? Well, here are some old web pages. They were made by students, and they still look very bare bone because this was the web technology of 1995. But this is probably the more interesting thing. What were our main concerns? Well, we were concerned about conversational speech recognition because we realized that, unlike Wall Street Journal or other dictated speech corpora, conversational speech is much harder for machines. We were interested in multilinguality, so we thought about Spanish and English and trying to work on both of them. Requiring lots of labeled corpora was still considered a big headache even then. Of course, it's a problem even today. So there was a team working on sparse data training. And I think this was Fred's line. He must have said it in other places, but I heard it first from him at the workshop where he said, you know, we do this language modeling using computers. We just look at word sequences. Let's try to put language back into language modeling. So there was a team working on phrase structure and so on. And here are some of the things. By the way, in those days, we made transparencies in plastic foils and projected them using a mirror. And so this was a foil from one of the teams. There is still your classic question, which is alive even today, is Trigram the best conventional model? The answer is it's kind of the best we can do, really. But then there's one question which is rather intriguing. Can we predict when our output is correct? And you'll hear from Professor Hermansky very soon. It is, even today, one of the key questions. Do we know when our, do our machines know when they're broken, when they're not working well? And it's still a very hard problem. Right, so that was 95, but that started two decades of adventures, and I'll just call them summer adventures. So the first three that I remember are these. So 96, there was a team working on pronunciation modeling, another one on dependency language modeling, one on speech data modeling. 97, again, you can see the focus is still on speech recognition, multi-scale acoustic processing, syllable-based models, modeling the discourse of conversations, and so on. And then finally in 98, you start seeing the first forays into natural language processing. So in addition to speech and rapid adaptation to new speakers, we have the first team which is unashamedly about natural language processing of text, not just speech, and it's called Core NLP for multiple languages. So I've highlighted a few because whenever I put these up, I try to think, so what is most remarkable about these teams? These workshops have a long history of making big breakthroughs. And so one of the breakthroughs was in 97, this team that went on to work on data-driven pronunciation models, they pretty much started a whole little field, and there have been lots of papers, special sessions, trying to figure out how spontaneous pronunciations are different from canonical ones, and so on and so forth. The other team that comes to mind is the speech data modeling team. One of the more remarkable things this team discovered is that even if you say, let me forget about how human hearing works and purely from data think about how the temporal dynamics of speech are perceived and how, like, you know, how they're, what needs to be found in them so that you can recognize it. It turns out the data-driven analysis gives you the same kind of things that Hynek had done by thinking about perception called RASTA. So these are these RASTA filters. And so that workshop kind of did a nice scientific experiment to show that you get the same thing whether you go the perception route or the completely data-driven route. So you can often get these things to agree with each other. Right? And then, of course, I put Jan Haich in green because this is just to remind you that this is what Jan looked like in those days. So there's Jan, you may recognize Dan Zeman, Barbara Hladka. Charles University has always had, like, you know, very close connections with the workshops. So here are some of the people. You might recognize Mike Collins. He was still a grad student then. And then a whole bunch of others. Oh, there was another thing about this workshop. 98 was the first time we started having undergraduates. So the IDA tradition with SCAMS was just professors and PhD students, but one of the things Fred wanted to do is he wanted young blood in the group, so we started bringing in undergraduates, and these are one of our first undergraduates, Cynthia Kuo and Oren Schwartz. Moving on, so this was 96 to 98. Let's look at the next 3 years, 99, 2000, 2001. Again, now you see NLP very squarely in the workshop mix, so we're processing text as well as speech. We're thinking about speech synthesis for non-standard words, machine translation, detecting novel topics as they arise in the news. So your computer is listening to the AP Newswire as it comes along or reading it, and it says, hey, wait, a news story just broke. So you'd like to detect very quickly that some new event has taken place. So those kinds of problems. Reading comprehension. Can you give your computer an essay of maybe 1,000 words and make it answer questions the way a third grade student does? So those are the kind of problems that we were tackling in 2000. 2001, there was a team working on graphical models. These are dynamic Bayesian networks. These are now all the rage these days. And Jason will mention them in his talk, saying even they are not enough. And of course, another team working on automatic summarization. Could you really read, have your computer read all the news stories about the earthquake in Taiwan and give you a nice 100-word summary of what's really going on? And I highlight some of these again, trying to think about what was new and interesting in these 3 years. Statistical machine translation. This team more or less single-handedly revived the whole field of statistical machine translation. The ideas had started in 94 at IBM, but they had died away because the originators went off to Wall Street to make money. And this team essentially put all the ideas back together, developed a toolkit called GISA, which later on became GISA++, the child of Google's head of machine translation. And so that team has really had a big impact. And Jan Surin from this faculty was a member of that team. So you can see, again, Charles University's fingerprints in all the crimes. And the other two teams have produced very useful toolkits. So the graphic GMTK from Jeff Bilmes and Mead from Drago are very popular, used widely. I highlight Bill Byrne because already back in 99, we were thinking of multilingual acoustic models. And today, if you go and look at some of the biggest programs in speech in the US, they're all talking about how to try to use speech from multiple languages to do well and so on. So you can see the seeds of the idea already up there. From this year, I couldn't find pictures of team members, so I put up a picture of Fred and a picture of me when I still had hair and it was still black. So moving right along. The next 3 years, 2002, 3, 4, again brought more interesting things. The machine translation continued to be a big theme. We looked at speaker and language identification. We tried to put syntax. Now we're trying to put linguistic knowledge into machine translation. We're trying to do confidence analysis, meaning trying to figure out when our machines know what they know and what they don't know. And here for the first time, you also see in 2004, computer vision creeping into the mission of the workshops. Because, you know, if you think about speech, language, vision, they're all sensory perceptions which involve processing signals. And the computer vision community had been our sister community for a long time, and we've started drawing them in. By 2004, 10 years ago, we started drawing them into our field. Again, the highlights for this year, or these 3 years, the Super SID team, the Super Speaker ID team, made a remarkable breakthrough over the summer. So at the beginning of the summer, there were certain error rates in deciding whether two speech cuts were from the same speaker or different. So if you call your bank, you could try and use your voice as a second level of authentication in addition to a password or something. And then if you do that, what are the chances that somebody can spoof it? And the error rates used to be maybe 3% or something. By the end of the workshop, they brought it down to less than 1%. It was a big reduction. And the interesting phenomena that they used was this idea that speakers have particular ways of pronouncing words. And one of the key members of that team was another Charles University student, David Klusacek. So again, you see Charles University everywhere. And anyway, the other thing, nice thing about it is people in the field will remember Franz Ock had a syntax bet with Kevin Knight. So the first machine translation team that made a big breakthrough, they tried to put syntax into the translation system. And at the end of this workshop, Franz bet that it was never going to help. And 10 years later, I think he's finally being proved wrong, but it did take us 10 years to do that. So here is Franz at the workshop. This is back in 2002 or 3, whenever it was. And he's smiling. We are in somebody's apartment. What are we doing? Well, we're actually celebrating a team member's birthday. So workshops are also about fun, not just about, like, you know, doing work. Anyway, so moving right along. The next few years, again, we continue with speech. 2005 can seriously be called the year of parsing. So one team wanted to parse dialectal Arabic because, you know, Arabic has a standard form which is written in well studies, but the dialects are very different and hard. Another team wanted to do speech parsing to try and extract structural events. And a third team wanted to cast the whole machine translation problem as a synchronous parsing problem. So if I had to give a label, I would say 2005 was the year of parsing. 2006, we went back to articulatory speech recognition and to machine translation again. And then 2008, 7, 8, as you can see, the things continue. Now, I was looking at this list and asking, so what are the two biggest impact things, or one biggest impact thing? For the one, there was a clear tie. And that is because these are truly remarkable things. So the team that's called Open Source Toolkit for SMT, this is the team that originated what we call MOSES today. It's the translation toolkit that's widely used everywhere in the world, not just in academia, it's used in industry. It's sort of the de facto standard for doing machine translation. And many people want to beat MOSES, but the only way they do it is they build on top of it. Right? So that's MOSES for you. But equally important in the field of speech was this team that worked on robust speaker ID. A young graduate student in there by the name Najim Dehak came up with a technique which is called generating I vectors. And I vectors have now become absolutely the best way to do speaker and language recognition. And Charles University. Andre Boyar, who's now on the faculty here, used to be a graduate student in the open source toolkit for MT team, right? And so as a tribute to the two people who had the biggest impact in those years, I put up Philip Kuhn and Najim Dehak. So these are the machine translation and the iVector guys. So again, these workshops have a lot of remarkable contributions to the field. Going ahead, 9, 10, 11, 12. Again, we see more work on speech, low-resource speech recognition, scalable parsing. People were now thinking about how to make these NLP techniques applicable to web-scale data, because after all, if you want Google or somebody to use your parser, it needs to parse a billion web pages, so it needs to be really efficient. People worked on using more advanced machine learning techniques and speech recognition, like segmental conditional random fields. Speech synthesis reached a point where we're starting to ask questions, why does my speech synthesizer sound so machine-like? Can't it sound more natural? Can't it express any emotions? So Alan Black worked on emotional speech synthesis and so on. So when I look at highlights, when I think of these 4 years, without a doubt, the low-resource speech recognition team from Dan Povey has had a large impact. So Moses is to machine translation what Kaldi is to speech recognition. So the state-of-the-art, public domain, open source speech recognition toolkit is called Kaldi. It was again born in one of these workshops. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say this officially. Well, I won't name the company. A number of companies use it internally for their speech engines. And these are big name companies. They're like, you know, in the North, I think they might even make the top 20 technology companies in the world. A lot of academics use it. Recently, NIST had a speech recognition evaluation in which they asked everybody in the world to participate, and 9 of the top 10 teams used Kaldi as one or their only speech recognition engine. So again, this is a unmitigated success of the workshops. And the other thing I want to do is I want to show you that by this time, computer vision has got a firm foothold in our workshops. So in 2010, there was a team from Comcast, of all people, the cable company, leading a workshop research team to try and identify actions and objects in video because they wanted to do content-based access to their television programs. There was a team in 2011 trying to learn from visually descriptive text because often images are accompanied by descriptions. And in 2012, there was a team working on understanding objects and scenes and what's going on in them. So I'll just give you an example of what the Alex and Tamara Berg team did. So their computer program is able to take an image like this one and produce a caption that says, this picture shows one person, one grass, one chair, and one potted plant. The person is near the green grass and in the chair. The green grass is by the chair and near the potted plant. And this is an automatically generated caption. By the way, the computer thinks that the big green square which says lemonade, I think it thinks it's grass. But that's okay. So there is this nice interaction between computer vision and natural language processing, and the workshop has really started leveraging those. So 2013, I wanted to take a break from organizing it, and my colleagues at CLSP were also busy with a few other things. So we decided not to have a workshop, but the world wouldn't have it. So a team got together, and with a little bit of help from Hinek, they organized themselves, and we still had a workshop. And it was very successful, and it had just one team, but there were about 25 people. They came to Johns Hopkins, did some really nice work, and I should really say Hinek managed to continue to make the tradition unbroken. And that was 2013, and there was so much enthusiasm that we said, look, we can't stop doing this. So we're back in 2014 now, and this time we asked Jan to help us by helping us organize this whole thing, and he very graciously agreed. So this is the first time we're doing this. We will try and maybe use this as a pilot to see if we can indeed get other universities involved, but this is certainly a very good start. If this is how it's going to be, we'll definitely want to take the workshop outside more often. So these are the three teams, and I won't belabor what they're doing because after our opening presentations, each team will give you a detailed presentation. One team is on speech recognition, and it's led by Hermansky, as I said. The second team is on cross-lingual abstract meaning representations, and the third one also is starting to look at deeper representations of meaning. Right? So as always, these workshops take a lot of effort, but they also take a lot of money. And so the workshops have had the good fortune of having very generous sponsors all through the years. They were started, as I told you in the beginning, mostly with Defense Department funding. But 98, when Jan led the NLP team, was the first year when undergraduates started coming to the workshop, and that's because NSF jumped into the sponsorship pool. And NSF always cares about students, so they said, no, you should have more students. And he said, oh, that's exactly what we've been thinking. So it was a good marriage of ideas, and so since then, NSF has been one of, I would say, two or three sponsors. It's usually some money from the Defense Department, some money from NSF. And for the last 4 or 5 years, Google has been giving us money. 1 year, we got a little bit of Microsoft. This is a good sign, because what this says is this workshop has now multiple stakeholders. Many people want this to happen, which is always a good thing for any organization, because the more people you have looking after you, the better. That's why we think its prospects are very good going forward. This particular year, the workshop is sponsored by NSF's Office of International and Integrative Activities. And within that office, they have a program called Partnerships for International Research and Education. And Fred had received a PIRE Award, Partnership for International Research Education is abbreviated PIRE. And this PIRE Award was for collaborative investigation of meaning representations in language understanding. When we started it, it was a joint project between Johns Hopkins and Brown Universities in the US, and Charles University and Saarland University in Germany. And it was a nice group. We worked, did many interesting things. Oh, and Charles University received some funding from the Ministry of Education, Saarland University from DFG. And this project went on, and it's actually still running. Fred unfortunately passed away in 2010, but NSF was very kind. They said, yes, you can finish up the project, you can wind it down. And under our new leadership, Hinek Hermansky and Martha Palmer joined us, and so we basically reoriented the project a little bit, and we are now in our final year of that project. So that's where we are, and therefore PIRE is sort of the primary sponsor of this workshop, so if you ever acknowledge it, don't forget to acknowledge NSF when you write papers from this project, right? So very briefly, the goals of this particular PIRE project, I've just copied this from our original abstract from many years ago. It says, this partnership links senior and junior researchers with their counterparts. So unlike your standard NSF grant, this grant really pushes the connections between US and non-US researchers. So all of you US students over here, remember that to fulfill the goals of this project, you have to make connections with people here. And both senior and junior people, so get to know the faculty here, get to know the students here, and vice versa for the non-US people here. This whole program is meant to foster collaborations across national boundaries. Research-wise, of course, we're investigating formal representations of linguistic meaning, but then PIRE is also different from other NSF projects, maybe not so much, but a little bit, in that there is a big emphasis on education, on integrative education. So the last line says, introducing students to linguistic formalisms and training them to apply these formalisms in their research. So this is an urging to the senior people in the workshop. Please keep all the students in mind when you give your plenary lectures. Make sure it's accessible not just to your peers, but also to students, not just to students in your field, but students a little bit outside your field as well. It's something that we would like to see happen in the summer, right? So planning for this began quite early. We had a routine site visit with NSF in March of 2013, where we were trying to figure out where the students would go. Some students went to the Technical University in Brno. One student came here, one went to Saarland, one to Australia. But in the process, we were trying to figure out how to get these students also to sort of talk to each other, have a sort of, you know, a feeling of unity and sort of be feel like a team. So we had these weekly meetings in the fall semester, but in the spring, everybody went away to their respective universities. So we decided that we'll bring them back together in this culminating experience here in Prague. That's how we started it. And NSF said, yes, you have experience with these workshops. Why don't you do one of those in Prague? And once we said, if you're going to do that, we might as well not restrict it to just these 4 or 5 students, but invite more people. So we added another 28 researchers from the US. There are 15 senior people and 13 PhD students. And we invited 10 plus non-US researchers, not counting the Charles University participants. So this has become a nice 50-person effort, as Jan, I think, will summarize when he tells you all the people who are here at the workshop. So this is where we are. Our program, actually, first, very quickly, the team. So this is one of the three teams, Clamor for short. They're working on cross-lingual abstract meaning representations. And I think Dan and Andre will give us a technical presentation of what they're planning to do. They have a number of senior people and a number of students, as you see listed here. I won't belabor you with their names. You'll find them again on our website. The second team is led by Jason Eisner and Ben Van Dermy, and this team is going to do some more blue skies thinking about what can we do, or how do we represent linguistic meaning in a way that is both satisfying to us, that it actually captures what we think the sentence means, and at the same time is amenable to computation, amenable to inference, and not simply in the old logic sense, but more in a pragmatic, probabilistic sense. And finally, there is a team led by Hina Krzyzmanski, and this team is going to focus on, again, this age-old problem: how do our speech or machine translation or NLP systems, in this case speech, know that they're not working properly, that something is broken? And how do you use that to perhaps go back and correct what's going wrong and try and improve upon it? And it turns out that the harder you think about it, the more you realize that you need to look further up the processing chain to see that something is wrong way down at the beginning of your processing. So these are the three teams. Our agenda for the next few weeks: we are in that blue portion today. We are in the workshop opening day presentations. What you'll notice is the first week is dedicated to prelim, this blue skies long-term thinking about meaning representations. And there are 9 plenary lectures, plus, of course, all the time in the middle is going to be spent in discussions and brainstorming and so on. And of course, we'll have a welcome dinner today at a nearby location. And all through the 4 weeks, every Thursday, we'll try and go out as a team to some local restaurant, just enjoy Prague, get to see the city a little bit. Right? I do want to emphasize one thing. At 3 o'clock every day, I write their town hall meeting. This is really a coffee break, okay? Coffee and cookies. However, it's very important that everybody comes here. Jack, my colleague, was telling me, most likely the next big idea that we'll talk about in 10 years will come about in one of those coffee breaks. Right. So please, I'm going to go around and every day at 3 o'clock, I'm going to bang the doors on every lab and say, everybody upstairs to room S1, we're having coffee. And we found over the years that this is a really, really important part of the workshop. You really have to meet and talk to people and get to know what they're doing. The second and third weeks are much more work, so there'll still be the town hall every day. We will have, at every morning, 10 o'clock, a tutorial-style lecture by the senior participants so that all the students can be brought on board. And, each team has students of different strengths. I'm hoping that by the end of the workshop, all the students know about all the other teams so that you go back here with a much more enriched set of ideas and way of thinking. And finally, the last week will end with closing presentations pretty much all day long from 9 in the morning till about 3:30 in the afternoon, where there will be detailed technical presentations. Right? So let me close by saying, if Fred had been here, he'd have loved to be among us. This is him acting as ship captain at, I think, his son's wedding. I'm sure he'd have liked to be the captain of this ship. So we dedicate this workshop to his memory. Thank you.
So thanks, Sanjeev, for your presentation. It was really a lot of information in a very short time. I must say I forgot some of those things over the years. So this was great that we will have a video of that as well. So now I would like to talk about the mundane things, like the program of the rest of today and about some of the logistics for the workshop. So bear with me, it will be short, but there is some information which you would like to know. So first of all, now we are at the first break, so the coffee break will be outside. For today, somewhat contrary to the original plans, there will be a common dinner which will be catered, so you won't have to pay anything, and it will be in the cafeteria in this building, so that you can have a look and decide whether you will use the cafeteria throughout the workshop or whether you want rather to explore the outside. Of course, you are free to choose any place. This evening, there will be another free event. It will be the welcome dinner, which is very nearby. And I suggest that we meet 5:45 in front of this building. If you don't want to look for the place yourself, we can go as a group. But of course, if you want to be on your hotel and just come there, everything is on the web, and I will show where the information is. So this is for today. The afternoon, the teams will be in their assigned rooms. I will help, Ondřej will help, and other people will help with the setup. Also, don't forget, we will have like a first, try it out town hall meeting today in S1, which is on the fourth floor at 3 o'clock. It will be short, only half an hour, because at 3:30, we have the first prelim talk. So it's actually not starting tomorrow, it's starting today. This talk won't be here, it will be in the room where all the plenary talks will take place, and that's the room S9. It's the same floor, but the other corner of this corridor. The most important information throughout the workshop will be on the website. So there are two websites, one at CLSP, which is the main workshop website, and there is also the local logistic website, which I believe you have all seen, with all the information about housing, local transport, and all that stuff. There is also a map of all your places, of the dinner places, and so on. So the web is the primary source of information. Now, there were, of course, as Sanjeev said, quite a few people preparing this workshop. And they will also help you throughout the workshop should any problems arise or should you have any questions. So first of all, it was Denka Ureshova, who you probably have been in touch with regarding accommodation, visa, and other things. And again, the preferred way of communication is by email. But please stand up so that everyone sees you. And her office is also my office, and it's the fourth floor, all the way across the corridor. So just in case, just please come in. Kateřina Stuparičová is taking care of the administration. She will set the registration as well today. And if you have any problem, she will be here 8 to 5 every day, because we might not be here every day. Now, of course, for program issues, that's certainly Sanjeev and myself as well. If you have any technical problem, just come to me. There were many other people who were preparing this workshop from the technical point of view, administrative, and so on. And of course, I will give them a big thank you at the end of the workshop. But for now, this is the main context context for that. The office of Kateřina is 412. It's just left. If you turn left of the on the staircase at the end of first on the fourth floor, just in case you need something. Also, please direct your colleagues who are coming later to pick up the registration and the key tag and so on. So this is, I guess, all I have to say about the logistics. Please enjoy Prague. You will have a little bit hot weather and some storms today and tomorrow, but after that it should be on the cool side. So I hope you will enjoy that as well, and we hope to get some sun in the following weeks as well. Again, enjoy the workshop, and I hope something good and nice will come out of it, like Sanjeev said. Thank you.